Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology, where you'll learn to simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining me today in this podcast. Let's get started. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get your free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. I have a great show for you today. I'll be teaching you ways to use your grief to heal. I'll also be interviewing Sherry Ricard, who has an inspirational story of how she and her family overcame the loss of their son. You all know me as a psychotherapist, but many of you do not know me as a composer. My first album, Consolation, was written specifically for people who are experiencing grief and loss. I like to think of this album like a book. Each original composition is written like a chapter in a book. And just like in any story, it goes from the loss that one experiences and eventually helps people find the hope for their future. You may purchase this album on iTunes or through any other digital music store. Be sure to download the digital booklet that comes along with it. The name of the album is Consolation, and my stage name is James S. Miller. The name of the piece you are currently hearing is entitled, I Was Wondering. I can tell by that look, friend, that you need to talk. So come take my hand and let's go for a walk. See, I'm not like the others. I won't shy away because I want to hear what you've got to say. Your child has died and you need to be heard, but they don't want to hear a single word. They tell you your child's with God, so be strong. They say all the right things that somehow seem wrong. They're just hurting for you and trying to say they'd give anything to help take your pain away. But you're struggling with feelings I can't understand, so forgive them for not offering a helping hand. I'll walk in your shoes for more than a mile. I'll wait while you cry and be glad if you smile. I won't criticize you or judge you or scorn. I'll just stay and listen till your night turns to morn. Yes, the journey is hard and unbearably long, and I know that you think that you're not quite that strong. So just take my hand, because I've got time to spare. And I know how it hurts, friend, for I have been there. See, I owe a debt you can help me repay, for not so long ago I was helped the same way, as I stumbled and fell through a world so unreal. So believe when I say that I know how you feel. I don't look for praise or financial gain, and I'm sure not that kind who gets joy out of pain. I'm just a strong shoulder who will be here till the end. I'll be your compassionate friend. Your Compassionate Friend by Stephen L. Channing. Using your grief to heal. We all will experience some form of grief in our life. Grief can be the cause of a loss of some sort. It can be the loss of a relationship, a loss of a family member, a loss of a friendship, perhaps even losing a job or even your house. When we experience grief, we move through 5 stages of it. The stages of grief are originally denial, then anger, then bargaining or bartering, then you have depression, and finally acceptance. And so for this particular lesson, I'm just going to focus on the acceptance piece. A few weeks ago, we talked about radical acceptance, and I know I talk about that a lot, but I think it's one of the most important lessons we can learn. This is something I use in my own life, and it's something I think we all should practice. Radical acceptance simply means you accept the facts as they are. And when you remove the emotion from the situation, it helps you just focus on what the facts are, and which then helps you formulate a plan for how you're going to move beyond it. One of the main things we usually experience with grief is we focus on the why. Why did this happen? Why did this person die? Why did this person leave me? Why did I lose my house? Why did I lose my job? And when we focus so much on the why, it causes us to focus on the situation prior to the event happening. It doesn't allow for us to create a proactive stance to move beyond the situation. Instead of focusing on why, we simply need to focus on it is. Of course, in saying this, I'm in no way minimizing the loss that you've experienced. But when we can specifically focus on these are the facts today, it then helps us radically accept it to then say, well, how do I want my tomorrow to be? Grief itself is a movement process. It goes from, like I said, the 5 stages, but sometimes we get stuck in one of those stages. And when that happens, it starts to become a lifestyle. It takes on a whole life of its own. For example, the 2nd stage of anger. If someone does not move beyond that stage of anger, it will eventually turn into bitterness. It will turn into someone who's just an angry person all the time. We've all met those people. Perhaps someone who's lost someone, they get caught up in that stage of anger, and then they just become this bitter person, and it's not someone that we enjoy being around. Same type of thing when it comes to the depression piece or the sadness piece. Someone can get so lost in the depression stage that that then takes on a whole lifestyle of its own. Grief was never meant to be who we are. Grief was meant to be a healing process for us to then help us move to the next chapter of our life. And as I've said before, when something happens in our life, we will never be the same. When a traumatic event happens or any situation that may come up in our life, it is going to change us. It's going to change our perspective. It's going to change our lifestyle. All these things are going to happen. So when we can figure out the direction our life should go beyond this traumatic event, then it helps us reformulate who we are as we pass through these stages. When we experience this loss of some sort, it's very difficult because sometimes people will memorialize the event. The date when someone passes away, they focus on that. So every year, they re-traumatize themselves by reliving that situation. And when you memorialize it to such a degree that it re-traumatizes you, it will be very difficult for you to move on to the next level because every single year, you bring yourself back to that emotional experience, which is so profound, that you'll never truly pass beyond the stages of grief. You will continually grieve and grieve and grieve. So remember, grief is a process. It is a time in our life. It should not be the lifestyle of who we become. One of the most difficult things is to use your grief in an energetic way or a proactive way. And what I mean by that is typically when someone experiences grief, they become very internal. Sometimes they'll isolate. Sometimes they will be very quiet and closed off with other people. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But in order for someone to move beyond grief, we have to take that energy, that inward energy, and we have to move it proactively. We have to move it externally. How can you take the memory from whatever was lost and use it to perhaps help other people? Have you ever noticed that if you end up telling your story to someone, that it somehow helps them? It helps them relate with you somehow. The good thing about lifeology is we've all experienced emotions. We all experience some type of commonality, and that's usually based on our emotions. The situations may be different, but our emotions are the same. So let's say you lost someone. 2 years down the road, you tell your story to someone who just lost someone, maybe a month ago. You are the example of how they're going to be in 2 years. And so it gives them hope. And by no means does it mean that you're completely healed or that you moved on beyond the current situation, but it simply means you have some distance from that grief. And so you can tell them the things that have helped you. What have you done? And of course, it's not always an easy journey, but you've been able to formulate something for yourself to be able to help someone who may have just experienced this. When you can surround yourself with people who use their grief in a proactive way, you all in a group mentality will help each other move beyond the profound level of grief. That's why support groups are always so helpful. Because you realize you're not alone. Sometimes when we're in a situation where the grief is so profound and so pervasive, we forget that other people have experienced this before. And by no means does that take away from your level of grief, but what it does is it helps you be around people who may have some suggestions to help you heal. It's really important for you to find a purpose with the grief. And once again, it doesn't mean you ask why or why did this happen, but you find a purpose in how you can perhaps use that loss to help other people. Some people create foundations. Some people will write a book. Some people will tell their story to someone on the subway or just someone down the street. And that helps the listener move on perhaps from their own grief. But when you can take that and not memorialize it, but when you can take it and use what you've experienced to create something, to build something, to write something, when something is lost, something automatically will take its place. Look at nature. When there's a loss in nature, in the environment, something will take its place. And for us, when we experience loss, our grief takes its place. But once again, grief was never meant to be permanent. And so it's vital for us to be proactive in refilling our life, or refilling that void with something that can honor whatever it is that we lost. Because if we don't fill that void with something that's proactive, then that anger, that depression, that bitterness may encroach in our life, and that's what refills that void. But we always want to remind ourselves that what was lost, unfortunately, will never be given back to us, But we can take that memory and we can take whatever it was and we can create a legacy of sorts. And then when we create that legacy, we'll always have that entity that was lost in our thoughts, but in a joyful way, in a celebratory way. And I know in grief, it can be so overwhelming at times. And of course, I'm talking about the fifth stage of grief, when we can get to that level of acceptance. So of course, we're going to go through the denial. We're going to go through the anger. We're going to go through the bargaining or bartering. We're going to go through the depression. And then when we recognize that acceptance is a possibility, that's when we start to heal by perhaps being a part of these different support groups, or perhaps even telling your story. The story of what you've lost and what you've overcome can heal so many people. We are all hurting at some time in our life, but you're not alone. So I'd really encourage you to be a part of perhaps an organization, to be a part of something that can really honor the memory of whatever it was you've lost. Radically accept the situation as the facts as they are, get to that level of acceptance, and that will help you then create something beautiful from that which was lost. And now a quick word from my sponsor. For you, my listener, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. Many of you don't know this about me, but I'm an avid reader. So this is a great opportunity for me to be able to download any book I'd like to read, specifically if I'm walking my dog at the gym or even driving. So for you to get your free audiobook, go to www.audibletrial.com/James Miller Lifeology. They have over 185,000 books for you to choose from. So I'm pretty confident you'll find the book you're looking for. So check it out today. I have the pleasure of introducing Sherry Ricard, who is a published author and speaker who instills passion, purpose, and peace to all of her audience. Thank you so much for joining my show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Now, you've written three books, but I wanted to specifically focus on the one book, which is called Wake Up Call, A Mother's Grief Journey. Could you tell my listeners a little bit about that book, please?
Sure. Wake Up Call, A Mother's Grief Journey is a true story about a young man named Bryant Kite. Bryant is my son, and he was a rising upcoming senior in the summer of 2007. Great-looking young man. Of course, all mothers will say that, but he was very popular, outgoing. He was an honor student, National Honor Society. He was a star baseball player for his high school, Cordova High School in Memphis, Tennessee. He had aspirations to be a baseball player for LSU in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, which made me very excited. We actually had a conversation 4 days before he passed away about becoming a doctor. Of course, you know, he's very smart. But the book actually goes into what happened, which was a tragic one-car accident in the summer of 2007, July 12th. And I was 2,000 miles away in Southern California, away from home. Yeah. I was on a business trip, got a phone call at 2:21 a.m., and I received that call, the wake-up call every mother dreads in the middle of the night. And I talk about that in the book. I also talk about and give guidance and hope, and I try to just do the best I can to be a voice not only for a grieving mother, but also to help someone that doesn't have the right words to say, I guess, or doesn't know how to handle a situation when someone loses a child. So the book was actually inspired many, many years later because I wrote in a journal for 7 years after Bryant died. And I started on my first birthday after his death, which was in November, and I just started journaling. I had to journal in order not to put my emotional and verbal burdens on everyone around me, but I had to get them out because I felt like I was going crazy.
I'm sure.
And you know, if you've lost someone really close to you, especially a child, then you can just imagine how you feel like you're losing your mind. And so I journaled. You know, I journaled for many, many years, and 7 years later, it turned into a book, and from there, two more.
Wow. So let's talk about that. When that incredibly horrible situation transpired, when you go back and look at, perhaps read your own book or look at those journal entries, what comes up for you? What emotions were you experiencing? I mean, obviously, the pain and loss. I mean, that's a given. But how, I can't even imagine how devastating that was for you.
Yeah, you know, and I still think about it today, of course. July 12th was the 9 years that my 17-year-old son was killed. And, you know, sometimes it feels like 9 days, 9 hours, 9 months. But I go back and, you know, I've looked at those journals because I'm in the middle of actually writing a fourth book. And I've come such a long way from that first entry that if you would have told me then where I would be today in my emotions, I would have never believed you.
Sure.
But I truly believe that, you know, you have to have something to hang on to. For me, it was God. You know, it's not for everyone, but that was for me. I held on to my faith, but that's not saying that there wasn't a time where I wouldn't step foot in church. You know, we all go through anger, and the end that Bryant was in a one-car accident, wasn't hit by a drunk driver, so there wasn't anyone to be mad at. You know, he wasn't murdered, so there wasn't anyone to sit through a horrible trial with or anything like that. So I geared my anger towards God at the very beginning.
Sure.
And, you know, in all of my speaking that I've done, and I've been through many chapters of Compassionate Friends in several states, you know, I hear that over and over. The difference is moving from your anger to a place of peace and love and still honoring and remembering that loved one.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hard part. Because everyone's going to be angry. Everyone's going to go through anger. You're like, why is this happening? Who's to blame? Well, I didn't have anyone. So I had to write in a journal, I guess, to keep from being mad at someone God, you know?
I find that so many people that I speak with, that journaling has helped them so much. It helps purge out the emotionality. It helps purge out their thoughts and their emotions and their mind. And I'm so glad that was an option for you to be able to start that process. And of course, it doesn't mean it takes everything away, but it helps release it in a proactive, healthy way.
Yes, it does. It does. And then, you know, that's for people. You don't have to be a writer to journal. You know, we have recordings on our cell phones now. You know, you can press a button and just talk into a recording and save that. You can do it on your computer and then go back and transcribe those recordings into articles for someone else or for yourself or, you know, for a family member. There's a lot of ways to get it out, but we either have to write it or speak it, because if not, then it stays within and it stays stuck in that hole, that deep, dark hole.
Yes, it does. So tell me about the first year, because when it comes, as a psychotherapist, I usually discuss how grief and bereavement lasts for 3 to 6 months. It doesn't mean that we're over the situation, but that profound level of grief is so strong for 3 to 6 months. And then after that, it can turn into perhaps a mood disorder or something else. Of course, I'm obviously not diagnosing anybody else. But that first year is full of so much, because it's the first for everything, a first anniversary, a first holiday season, a birthday. I mean, all that comes together. How did you, besides the journaling, how did you and your family move beyond that as each of those firsts happened?
You know, I will tell you that with all the different mothers and the people that I have met and heard so many stories, I've gathered from them ideas to actually help my audience and my listeners and my readers, because I will tell you, for the first year, I stayed in denial.
Mm-hmm.
The way for me to deal, and my daughter, which was Bryant's best friend, they're only a couple of years apart, you know, she stays in a place of denial almost continuously because, you know, out of sight, out of mind, don't talk about it. I did that for probably the first year. His room never changed. And you know, and I do have my certification in grief counseling, which is something that I sought after Bryant died. I'm a registered nurse as well. But I did that in order for me to understand grief at a different level, because I haven't lost a parent. You know, I haven't lost a best friend. I haven't lost a husband. So I had to understand all realms of grief. I have found that the first year is so important that you make very little change. Mm-hmm. You know, I've met mothers that want to quit their jobs. They want to move out of their home because they can't live in the same house, or they want to change up the whole room, and then they are in depression because there's no remembrance of their child's room. Yeah. Now, I did nothing, absolutely nothing the first year. Bryant's room remained the same. And on that 13th month, my husband said, okay, we need to do something with that room. I mean, I literally had Bryant's baseball bag with his bats, his shoes, everything that was in his truck that night, I had laying on his floor. Well, you can imagine how torturous that is for his seven-year-old brother.
Oh, my gosh,
Who thought this was, you know, he was the next best thing next to sliced bread and Jesus. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Carson had to come out of his room and look directly across the hall at Bubby, who he called Bubby, his Bubby's room. So after about 12 months, you know, my husband said, okay, let's take down some of these pictures, because my home had turned into the Bryant shrine. And a lot of people listening is nodding their heads going, oh, yeah, that's my wife, or that's my husband, or that's my friend. But I had pictures of Bryant all over the walls, all over nightstands, end tables, everywhere you looked. Well, for someone that doesn't grieve like I did, that was torture for them to walk into my home. And it took a good year for me to realize that I have to pay attention to the grievers around me. You know, it's not about me. I was his mother, but his death is not about me. And so I gradually took down just a few things and kept up those, you know, monumental ones, his senior pictures. I have a big 10 by 13 senior picture of him in his tuxedo and his National Honor Society robe, which I keep in my office, and it looks at me, you know, when I'm in my office. And that's great. And then I have, you know, pictures here and there. But I took his room apart after that first year, but I didn't want to be at home when it happened. I literally left, and my husband got rid of the bed and everything in there while I was gone, gave it to friends that needed it or whatever it was. And I highly recommend not doing anything that first year, because some mothers have gone back and really, really had some deep depression and regrets over just spontaneous decisions they made in that those first 12 months.
I think that's great advice, because you're right. When people move too quickly or try and either are in denial by saying, well, if I get rid of this and I won't feel this anymore, you're right. It does cause them to feel guilty, feel overwhelmed. Right. Plunge into depression.
It does. And, you know, and I'm glad you asked me that, because I'm actually writing an article that will be on my blog. It's called Getting Through 365 Days After Loss. So I'm glad that you asked me that, because there's going to be, you know, we can't get into all of it in the show, but there's going to be a lot of tips to get through holidays, birthdays, you know, kind of cool things, because you have to turn this grief into a celebration of life. And that's what we've done with the Bryant Kite Scholarship Foundation that we created the first year that Bryant died. You know, you have to do something to remember that person. And some people don't want to. Some people want to just forget and move on. You know, there's people that won't go to Bryant's gravesite. Well, that's fine, but I'm not one of these moms that go out there to the gravesite and sit. Bryant's buried in Memphis, and I'm in Louisiana now. So that's not possible to do, and I do believe that was part of God's plan to put me in Louisiana, because I would have been one of those moms.
Sure.
I would have been one of the moms that sat out there every single week in depression. You can't do that and then say that you're honoring them and moving forward. You know, not moving over. You're not overcoming anything. You're learning and growing as you go.
Sure. You know, one thing I always teach my clients is not to memorialize events. When you memorialize events so much, and there's nothing wrong with thinking about the situation and acknowledging the situation as it is, but when the memory of that event becomes so profound, it's almost like every year or every time you memorialize it to such a degree, it's almost like that person's re-traumatizing themselves, because they go back to the level of the grief that they experienced when the situation happened.
Right. I totally agree with you, James, because, you know, one thing that we do, Bryant's birthday is in June, and every year I occupy myself in a place of peace, or try to in June. You know, I find that for me, you know, I had a girlfriend that told me the other day, she says, I don't know how you go to the beach because that was Bryant's favorite place in the whole world. I don't know how, you know, it doesn't depress you. Well, it doesn't. It gives me such peace to go to the beach. I don't know if it's the sand or the water or the sounds or the freedom away from home. I don't know what it is, and I really don't care.
Sure, Let's not think about it too much.
I don't care. I don't want to know all those answers. I know that I can sit on a balcony at a condo, or I can sit on a chair under an umbrella or in the sun and whatever, and I am at total peace. And so I try to do that. Every year during that week of his birthday, I try to go to the beach. And it's not I'm going to the beach for his birthday. It's just to put me in a place of peace. You know, I don't make a birthday cake like some of the moms do, which if that helps you, that's wonderful. I've never done that. Yeah. You know, I've never done a balloon release. You know, there's a lot of things that people do. I've never done those. But if they work for you and they move you from a place of depression and or anger into a place of love and peace and celebration, then do those things. But if you're finding that gathering friends and family for cake that says happy birthday to your son or your daughter or your mom, and, you know, releasing those, if it brings tears to everyone's eyes and it's not a celebration of life, you shouldn't be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're doing exactly what you just said. You're bringing everyone back to a place that they're trying to grow from.
Sure. And I think, you know, in hearing what you said as well is, you know, that week you go to the beach, I think it's so important that people prepare for those dates when they know it's going to trigger a memory. It's going to trigger some type of emotional response. So when you can plan for that, let's say an event happens in January, well, then you start to prepare for that in December. And so the more preparation time you have, not to think about the event, but to prepare yourself for the potential emotional release that you have in a healthy way, that's going to help you overcome the situation as opposed to be lost in the situation. So it's all about the planning time. It's always about the time of preparation, because the more preparation we have, the more successful we're going to be when that situation arises.
Exactly. And there's a lot of things that you can do. You know, it doesn't have to be on a particular anniversary. You know, there's a lot of ways to be very proactive in helping others heal in this time of tragedy. You know, like I said, we created the Bryant Kite Scholarship Foundation. And every year we go back to Memphis, and we present a scholarship, $2,000. Hey, it's made out to the child, you know.
Oh, that's wonderful.
They can use it. Yeah, they use it however they want. And we go back to Memphis, and we present this $2,000 check and a plaque to a child that we call Bryant-like. And, of course, you know, there's an application process. We involve Cordova High School in Memphis and the seven surrounding schools in that district that Bryant played against during baseball. So that's how we included the whole community. And we leave it right there. You know, one day maybe it'll be a national scholarship. But for now, it is a Memphis and that seven districts of schools. And we offer that application. There is a process. There's qualifications. And we have, you know, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And so we have a board of directors. And the board of directors and our fundraising committee select the candidate each year. I may shed a tear, but I've also had a big smile on my face that I'm able to do this in honoring my child. And so it gives everyone hope. And you should see the smile. I mean, it's the families that come to you and just, oh my gosh, you know, thank you so much. And, you know, you think my son is like Bryant, you know, that's an honor. And then that just fills you with, you know, you feel just that big, huge, large, dark hole just getting smaller and smaller when someone says, you helped me so much through your pain. This is what you did for me.
Oh, that's absolutely wonderful. And you just, like you said earlier, it's a celebration. You're celebrating his life. You're allowing the memory of the amazing young man he was. I was looking through your book. He's a good-looking young man. He seemed like his personality
was incredible.
And so I just think that's wonderful that you're able to memorialize it in a healthy way, in a way that helps his memory and the wonderful attributes of who he was in and helps instill that into the next generation or perhaps younger classmen as well. So absolutely wonderful. It really
yeah,
is.
And I'm so glad you said that because, you know, I'm just going to do a mommy bragging moment here. He was elected most attractive of his senior class. So I know you're looking at his picture going, uh-huh.
That's great.
But he was Bryant had the best heart. He cared for people so, so much. He was the most dependable friend. You know, he had such strong character. I'm not saying he was perfect. No, who is, right? But he was such a wonderful, wonderful person that why wouldn't I want to honor that and carry that on and allow someone else to have just a little bit of gift or benefit from that tragedy? Why does it have to be a tragedy and just end? And depression and sadness and heartache. Why does it have to end right there? We have to use that in a way of giving back something. You know, I've met so many moms, and one particular stands out. She lost her son to a drunk driver.
Oh, my gosh.
And what makes that story so tragic is 102 days later, her other son was killed on a motorcycle.
Oh, my gosh.
How do you move from that? How do you move from that? But let me tell you, these parents are chapter leaders in South Haven, Mississippi, for Compassionate Friends. They lead a support group. These two parents, these were their only children, and they lead a support group that meets every single month in South Haven, Mississippi. And it was such an honor to be there and be invited to speak to them a couple of years ago. And I remember their story because I just thought, oh, for a minute there, I forgot about my heartache. And my heart went out to them.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you start healing. You're like, oh, okay, well, let me take care of them for just a minute. Let me forget about me and my pain and let me help them for just a minute. And then from that, you begin to heal, and then you hear the next story, and the next story, and the next story, and you go, okay, well, maybe I'm not in this boat by myself. Maybe there is a mom that actually understands my pain. And then you have a mom that reaches out and says, I just lost my son 4 months ago. You know, I met so-and-so through this organization, and, you know, is there any advice that you can give me? Okay, well, let me forget about me for a minute and let me help her.
Yes.
And then it just goes on from that and that. And then they're the moms that join, you know, MAD, because they have so much anger that they have to put that anger into something that's a little more proactive.
Yes.
So they join Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. Highly recommended.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a children. What about the children of the parents or brother or sister that take their life? You know, and you have to go to the support groups. Go to the support groups, involve yourself, reach out, journal, write a book, go to, you know, speak at suicide support groups. You know, there's so many things that you can do from children. There's a lady here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, that lost her precious, precious daughter, and she was a friend of my youngest son, lost her to cancer last year.
Oh, my gosh.
And she's suffering so, so much that she involved herself in St. Jude, and that is how she will get through this.
Yes, that's a wonderful organization.
Yes. Her daughter was there for over a year and died, and she goes to Memphis. She stays in contact with those parents. She's involved in the St. Jude 5K run, and that is the only way she's going to get through this, because she's tortured on a daily basis with grief. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, with what I'm hearing you saying, it's when we get lost in the depression and the grief, sometimes that can be a very passive form of emotion. What I mean by passive is it's very internal. And so when you can take that internal emotion and move it into a proactive emotional expression or proactive movement, that's what helps a person have a catharsis or a type of emotional release. So when I say passive, I don't mean that we don't feel anything. I just simply mean sometimes it causes us not to be able to move forward. And so to find something when the time is right for you to involve yourself in something and taking that grief and moving it to an external portion of your life, that's how the person can grow and start to develop again through this horrible, horrible time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, James. And, you know, one thing that, you know, a lot of people don't realize is grief is an emotional response, right? It's a natural response of emotion and suffering. And you can grieve over a lot of things. You know, I've seen people lose their entire identity through their careers and their professions, and the grief is so profound that it mimics the grief of them losing a loved one that was close to them. You know, you see men and women alike suffer from divorce. Well, they grieve. I mean, look at the grief that they're suffering. They're grieving their entire life. They're grieving their homes on a lot of occasions. They're grieving that family unit. A lot of times they're grieving financially. You know, there's all kind of changes that come from divorce. And I talk about that in Healing Your Wounded Spirit, my second book, because, you know, one thing that I learned going through my certification in grief counseling was exactly that, was all of the grief from broken friendships and divorce and job and people lose their business. Well, the grief is profound.
It certainly is.
And you have to take that grief and find a way to get through it, whatever that is, you know, whether it be your faith in God or joining a support group or being involved or starting a foundation, a nonprofit, whatever it is that you need that is going to help you heal and not keep you in a state of misery and sadness and depression.
Yes.
And you know that emotion. You know, if everything that you do in that grieving process brings you sadness, you're doing the wrong thing. You're not on the right path.
One thing I always really tell people as well, kind of in conjunction with you, is with what you're saying, is grief is a process. Grief is not a lifestyle. If it becomes your lifestyle, then you've assimilated too much of it. You've lost yourself in that grief. And so when we recognize that grief is a process, but if we stay in that process and it becomes the rest of our life, or we have these emotions that are so pervasive, then we're not moving beyond the grief, because grief is supposed to be temporary. But when people don't recognize that, how temporary it is, and that becomes all of who they are, they're never going to be able to find the other side of what grief looks like, which is that living again. It doesn't mean living is the same, because every situation will always change us, but it just means you live in a different way, but hopefully in a healthier, proactive way of moving yourself through that grief by perhaps being involved in some of these things that you've discussed.
Exactly, because grief is two parts. Grief is two parts. The first part is loss, and the second is remaking of life.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So you go through the loss, which you're going to go through all the stages, and some people don't believe in the stages. I truly believe that you're at the stages. I just don't believe that they happen for everyone in the particular order that they were laid out. You know, back in whatever it was, 1969, you're going to have the denial, the anger, the bargaining. You're going to go through all of those stages, and they may be at different levels. But after that, it is the remaking of life. So how are you going to remake that life? And that's what I'm talking about. You know, your support groups, your foundations, your involvement to heal other people, whatever it may be, that's the remaking of life.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Well, Sherry, I want to thank you so much for being a part of my show today. You've been such a wonderful guest, and I really appreciate you opening up and telling us about your situation and how you've been able to move beyond your grief and how you're helping so many other people, how your son's memory continues to live on, which is absolutely wonderful. So if my guests want to find out more information about you, where would they find your information online?
So you can go to my website, which is www.sherryricard.com. SherryRicard.com. You can go to Amazon and just plug my name into the search box, and all of the books, printed and ebooks, because they're all three now on ebook, will actually pop up as well. If you go to the website and you hit blog, there are several articles and information there that could be helpful to your listeners.
Wonderful. Well, Sherry, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you, James. I appreciate it very much.
I'd also like to thank you, the listener, for joining with me today. Please subscribe to this podcast, either through iTunes or through whichever podcast portal you joined with me today. Also, please visit my website, jamesmillerlifeology.com, You may enroll in the Lifeology Academy I created. They're self-directed courses for successful people just like you. You may also see all the Lifeology YouTube episodes I've created. Currently, there are over 125 episodes there for you to watch. And also on my website, you may find many other tools and techniques which will help you simplify and transform your spirit, mind, and body. Have an amazing week, and I'll talk to you very soon.